This is Fathery.
This is Dave.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
To be asking each other a few questions. This is going to be the first installment in what I hope is a long series of Q&A videos.
This kind of goofy top 10 questions, like, or not top 10 questions, but just quick a quick call and response type questions.
Right. Yeah, we've come up with some questions for each other. We're hoping that in future episodes, y'all can actually ask us the questions. And ask anything you want. You can ask any question. We don't have to answer it, but you can ask whatever you want.
And we'd be interested to hear what your answers to these particular questions would be. We don't know what we're going to say to each other. Like,
no,
I might say to you, who do you think would win in a fight between Data and the M5 computer?
And I might ask Dave, if he was going to be in a chili cook-off, what Star Trek character would he want to be on his cook-off team?
DeForest Kelly's. McCoy.
You wouldn't go with Neelix? He was a chef.
You know what? As someone born and bred in Texas, I feel like... I just feel like that... I want somebody from Earth. They often made out that Neelix had... we should get on to the questions.
Yeah.
so let's jump to it. There might be some change of look here. The things might have been shot in a slightly weird order.
Right, there's going to be some time warping going on. We're doing a warp 9.9 around the sun. So we're actually going to flashback later to some previously asked questions recorded on the same night we recorded our first episode.
But mainly just enjoy the ridiculous questions.
For sure. So speaking of ridiculous things... Dave?
Are we ready?
Would you like to ask the first question?
Let's do it. I need to know, who is your Star Trek crush?
Okay. It was the character that I'm not sure how familiar you are with, but it would be...
Wait, before you even say it. So we're going with, like, there are, like... ongoing characters. There's, you know, like Deanna Troi, you know, was a common one, or Crusher, or Dax. These are all people who you could do. But yours is somebody singular. Who do we got?
She was on multiple episodes.
Oh, okay.
She had a recurring role in Deep Space Nine, and it was Lita, the Dabo girl, who married Rom, played by Chase Masterson.
Uh-huh.
Who, when I went to a convention in Plano, Texas, when I was a freshman in high school when I saw her.
Uh-huh.
But...
Perfect time for horniness.
Yes. And I actually bought an autograph from her. And I remember her signing the autograph and then leaning forward in a very low-cut shirt. I still have that mental photograph in my head. But yeah, Chase Masterson as Lita.
What is Dabo Girl? What is that?
She spins the Dabo wheel in Quark's bar. Which
it's
is
like a roulette
game.
Wheel.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then when somebody wins, you yell Dabo.
Nice. Clearly, by the way, the biggest gap in my Star Trek knowledge is DS9. I'm working on it.
We're going to get them caught up on it, though.
We're working on it.
So, your biggest crush in Star Trek?
This is... mine is a one-episode character. I could probably say, you know, I could go with I did have a thing for T'Pol on Enterprise. But that's not who my answer is. My answer is Tasha Yar's sister, Ishara Yar, from her scary-ass Planet of Gangs and Rape Gangs.
Yeah, that was,
That was one of those weird early season dark.
That was a fucked planet.
It was. It was. But when later on, in, after Yar died, when they went down and visited the planet because some Federation people had crashed there, they had to deal with the gangs that now control the planet. There were two sort of central factions that ran it. She was with one of them, and she, you know, they did that thing where she, you know, there was a big question of could they trust her or not. Was she as honorable as her sister? But to like 13 or 14 year old Dave. Mainly it was about the hotness. she looked sort of like, I'm going to say she looked a little like Linda Hamilton. You can Google her, people.
I would say she's hotter than Linda Hamilton.
I agree. And for people who were in this like hardcore, these gangs, they were like, she wore this like kind of like 80s like leather jacket jumpsuit thing with like a low cut blouse or something. It was... They looked like a very white boy gang, I hate to say it. They were not super threatening on that level. But I actually thought the actress was good too, but I'm gonna be honest and just say, just raw physical attraction. Ashara Yar, people. I don't know if they ever did anything with her in the books and like comics and stuff. But
not that I'm aware of.
Because she was so connected with such a principal character, I feel like there was actually more to explore there. She had an interesting moral ambiguity thing going on.
You know, I wonder if that was part of her... creation, if they thought about maybe using her more, if they weren't going to be able to use Tasha. But then they ended up using Tasha anyways.
Right, spoiler, yeah, they found a way to get her back in. Alright, what's your question, Father?
If you could have any piece of Star Trek technology, ooh, and you could have it as part of your daily, day-to-day life, it would be yours, you could use it, what would you want?
Are we including the holodeck?
Holodeck's included.
Man, because, like, the tricorder... I mean, this basically is a tricorder, I understand. But it doesn't make as many sounds as a tricorder. But as someone who does, like, role-playing games and stuff like that, how can I not say the holodeck? I feel like...
I've never thought of that application for a holodeck. That is... That's pretty brilliant.
I'm also like, I'm not even going to go into the fact that I could program Tasha Yar's sister into the holodeck. I'm not even going to touch on that. I'm just going to say, you know, you could throw yourself into any novel, movie, scenario you wanted. You could just be like, I want to play cards, but I want to do it on the deck of a ship going on a Caribbean cruise. So, as cool as the tricorder seems as an overall usefulness... And that was my first instinct until I thought of the holodeck. I'm going with holodeck. What's your answer to your own question? You should be like, a phaser so I can kill somebody.
That would be convenient, but...
it does hide evidence, you know?
Yeah, you could vaporize
if things. I was going with a Hitchcock style, how do you plan the perfect murder? I think CSI, I doubt they could trace, like, somebody killed by a phaser or a disruptor.
Yeah, or if you set it on disintegration,
yeah,
and atomize them, then...
But you could also just stun people periodically.
That would also be convenient.
But what is your answer?
I actually haven't thought about it.
But... a communicator. We can never possibly
if I could have like this handheld device I could keep in my pocket and pull out, and it would allow me to communicate to someone... who's at a different location than where I'm at, that would be really handy, but I think I'm
what
going...
What if you could just tap your boob and...
Oh, yeah, like the...
futuristic.
Yeah, I have, like, the comm badge pinned on and...
Yeah.
But no, I think I'm going to go with the medical tricorder, just because you could be like, oh, yeah, like, you have cancer, you should go to the doctor and get that checked out.
Yeah, I feel like it could probably walk you through treating somebody for cancer. So, yeah, that's a pretty good one. Not as... prurient as mine. Alright, let's do our next question. Okay, is there an episode that you originally didn't like, but then you warmed to it? I know this kind of out of nowhere, you should probably go and review every single episode. We'll pause the tape while you watch every single Star Trek episode.
There's like 700 episodes of Star Trek.
But there must be one that you didn't like initially, and you're just like, I don't know what people are liking about this, or you just thought it was crap, and now you like it.
I don't know. Most of the stuff that I liked, I continue to like. If anything, there were things that I thought I liked at first that I later dissected and found that I didn't like.
Well, maybe I should answer this question and I'll ask you an alt question. Because I definitely, you know, I was not, I had my issues with Star Trek Next Generation as yes. I was watching it.
Yes.
So I'm going to say the episode following the Borg, the first Borg two-parter, which was called
Best of Both Worlds.
Yep. I think it's called Home. Picard goes back to his family vineyard. Mm-hmm. He meets his brother. They're estranged. They have some problems. And to me, it was kind of a, I don't know, talky character episode that I remember I did not like at all at first. Especially maybe right on the heels of the Borg one, which was such a hardcore action one. You know, really suspenseful. But I rewatched it a couple years back, and I was like almost in tears at the end.
When I love that episode.
Picard is breaking down, and he and his brother have this, like, they physically fight each other. And it's such a great showcase for Patrick Stewart, mm-hmm. and everybody else in it. So yeah, I was just like, oh my God, I was so wrong. What was wrong with me? And I completely changed my ways on it.
Okay. I think I have an answer to the question.
Awesome. I thought you might think
if I can answer in the form of a movie.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Because
I hope it's a Trek movie, but go ahead.
Well, it's not as much of a Trek movie as I'd like it to be, but it's Star Trek Beyond.
Oh, okay.
When I first went to see it, it really rubbed me the wrong way for a few reasons.
Neither of us being giant fans of the Abramsverse.
The Kelvin timeline.
Yes.
You have to call it that.
All right.
Mandated by Paramount that we call it the Kelvin timeline.
All right.
Because they're not all directed by J.J. Abrams anymore.
That's true.
This was directed by Justin Lin. And when the first time I saw it, I think I mainly harped on the flaws. But after a second viewing, mm-hmm. I found more in that movie to like. And there were some things that it did that the previous Kelvin timeline movies didn't do. Like, this was more of a TOS-type story.
Mm-hmm.
And
right, you had a mysterious alien planet, a mystery to be solved on it,
You ignore all the characters except for Spock, Kirk, and McCoy, like the original series did.
Right?
I actually didn't like that as much, but... No, when I saw it a second time, I was like, oh, there's actually some stuff in there I like. I kind of like some of the in-continuity stuff they threw in with, you know, making references to the Zindi and Romulan Wars, and... I think the first time I saw it, I wasn't quite sure how all the USS Franklin stuff fit in the continuity. And,
right.
And after seeing it again, like the things in it that I really that really bothered me, mm-hmm. Weren't as apparent, and I started to pick up on, okay, well, there are a few touches in here that are kind of cool.
I feel like it's either my first or second favorite of the Kelvin movies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's the Beyond. What was the second one?
Star Trek Into Darkness.
That was easily the worst one. But this one, I've only seen it once. I didn't get multiple viewings like you did. But I actually liked it right out of the gate. I didn't love it. It had the same problems I expected it would have. But I had a good time with it. I liked watching the characters kind of all interact, and in that sort of, in the same way that in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, it was a lot about just watching these old favorites put into stressful situations and either be funny or inventive or cool. I felt like I was kind of seeing that in Star Trek Beyond, so yeah, I see what you're saying. I think the movie's a good answer. Do you want to throw one more question my way?
I think that's all the questions that we have for this part of the episode. But we actually have 6 more questions that we ask each other.
And they're good.
But they're in the past.
Super good.
So we're going to time warp around the sun. Mr. Sulu is calling out the ever-increasing warp factors as we approach time warp. And we will transport back to a previously recorded segment. If you're watching this on video, you'll see that our clothes are about to change. We're about to just jump completely back in time. And if you're listening to it on audio, you probably won't tell, and we didn't even have to explain this. But, yeah, we have 6 more questions, and then we'll check back up on you.
All right, here's my first one. Do you have a favorite piece of Star Trek music?
Hmm.
I would say just the,
that was dramatic.
The opening four notes of the original series.
You can't isolate but, just four notes.
But they also reused that with the in all the movies. Like,
oh yeah.
The James Horner, who scored Star Trek 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Jerry Goldsmith's the motion picture in Star Trek 5, and then a lot of the Next
Generation
stuff.
Is there a name for those four notes? For that little motif?
Just
that leitmotif?
The four notes.
Okay. Well, when you hear that, it's more than anything, it says Trek.
Yeah.
And it sort of speaks to, it sounds to me like sort of a searching, sort of exploring sort of thing. It has an optimistic sound to it. And you're like, you kind of swell with a little bit of pride when you hear it.
Yeah, and
or I don't know.
It's in all the movies. They use it in, you know, there's a big inconsistency in the Star Trek movies. I think that might bother people because, you know, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, but I think 6 different composers over 13 movies.
Right.
But those four notes are the
There's a certain broad orchestral kind of naval quality to it, especially from James Horner onward, of kind of a little bit music that might be used in a submarine or, you know, naval warfare type of movie, you know, have some of that exploration and excitement too. I feel like that's a broad trend that runs through it, but yeah, with that many composers, there's going to be a huge variety of interpretation.
They've always kind of shared like a similar style, until you get into Star Trek Into Darkness that have like piano music and
right,
kind of played around with the musical aesthetics there. What about you? What was your favorite?
You know, if I just for you know, it's hard to not love just the original music. I love the music in the Doomsday Machine and a lot of original scores there. But if I had to pick one, I was hugely devoted to the James Horner score for Wrath of Khan. And I would have to go with the sort of the action-oriented music from, I guess it's, I don't know what the track is called. It's probably like Khan Attacks or something like that. It's the very, the build-up to his attack, which has this this palpable sense of menace, as you know, the Enterprise and the Reliant are gliding past each other in space, and the Enterprise crew is trying to figure out why aren't they responding to us, and then it turns into action and like terror as, you know, Khan's ship rains down, you know, violence on them. That one, James Horner scored a lot of music, movies that I listened to, liked in the 80s, from kind of cheesier stuff like Kroll to serious fare like Glory. He was all over it. I think he's known to have been something of a musical thief, often taking, you know, very close stuff from classical music. But to me, I just know that it sounded cool, that it stirred me. I also love his when the Enterprise is leaving space dock music. And that's very naval sort of in its flavor.
Sure.
But if I had to pick one, I'm going to say the Khan Attacks one. Which is very not Star Trek-y, but I love the music. All right, throw a question at me. Bounce something my way.
Who do you, in Star Trek, who do you think you relate to the most?
Yeah, I thought about doing this question.
Who would you want to be in Star? Because I'm thinking they're probably not the same person.
No. Like, who do I relate to? It's probably like Barclay or something like that. I actually feel like that, like, the person I am might be closest to Geordi. That's who I am. You know what? I feel like I'm pretty good at the things I do, but, like, socially awkward, you know, like so many geeky, nerdy types, I was kind of socially awkward. I feel like, in some ways, not as socially awkward as he was. Poor Geordi. I remember the actor was a little bit ticked that he felt it was a little emasculating that his first girlfriend was a holodeck girlfriend.
Yeah, he didn't like that the black man on the show couldn't get laid, but the android could.
Yeah, but you know,
so they changed that. They had a whole story about like him becoming more confident.
Right, but if I had to pick one, and like he's not like a favorite character of mine. I kind of tend to like the Kirk, Spock, McCoy guys best, but. That's who I might feel closest to, who I would most want to be. You know, I like the... I probably like the confident guys. It's probably going to be like Kirk or Riker.
Yeah.
I might say that realistically, I like Kirk better as a character. Riker might be a little bit more balanced as far as like who I would actually want to be. So I'm going to say Riker.
Okay.
Who do you get?
I would also really like to be Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
But who I am most like, it's probably, I've actually had like a friend tell me that, I would be Dr. McCoy if I was anyone in Star Trek.
That's what I had pictured in my head.
Just because
I was like, if you say like, Janeway or something, I'm going to be like, nope, you're McCoy.
Yeah, he was the,
cause you're pigheaded.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. But you've got some of that.
I'm grumpy and complain a lot.
Yes.
Apparently.
But McCoy was also known for his empathy, you know. He was like he led with his heart. You know, he was the heart.
He was a bleeding heart.
Yeah, he was the heart to Spock's kind of cold emotion sometimes.
But I think I could also relate to the character Morn from Deep Space Nine, who was just pretty much just a set piece. He just sat at the bar and drank and never had one line of dialogue.
Wait, which guy?
His name's Morn, and he would just sit at the bar at Quark's. And, he never spoke. He's just like an extra in a suit.
Oh, but wow. But was he like always in there?
Yeah, he's actually in the first episode, an emissary. And then like they play around with it. Like they will often like refer to things like, oh, well, Morn told me about this. And,
oh, that's
But you never
that's
actually
cool.
hear him speak.
That's
there's
actually
an early
fun.
Episode where he laughs. And, yeah. And I think that was before like they came up with the idea of how to use them, but...
You know, if this was Star Wars, you know, there'd be, like, a few books dedicated to him. There'd be definitely be an action figure. Do they make an action figure?
I'm fairly certain there is.
I know that they made a ton when they were doing them in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, the 4-inch figurines. They had one of, like, every costume.
Oh, man, it was crazy. I was working at a Toys R Us at the time those were coming out. I wasn't buying any of those, but I did buy the Evil Spock Mirror Universe one. Because
I have that toy. I don't know where it is, but I have it somewhere.
I felt that if anything was awesomely emblematic of Star Trek, it was Mirror Universe Spock. You get, like, the awesomeness of Spock. You get the awesomeness of the Mirror Universe. You get the awesomeness of Goatee. You're looking up something. So I'm gonna look at another question I've got
okay.
here. Let's see. Oh, okay, this should be a fun one. What do you think is the coolest bad guy, Star Trek bad guy ship design?
Bad guy ship design. As you can tell, like I really like the ships in Star Trek and the designs. These are all models that I constructed.
I feel like at some point we should do an episode just devoted to the aesthetics, the visual aesthetics of their ships and where they depart from like Star Wars and... Anyway, we'll talk about it.
We can definitely cover that in more detail. I really like the I know you like it also, the Klingon D7.
Yeah.
And then later the Katinga class, which they used first seen in the motion picture.
Yep.
And then they used that also in the Next Generation in Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, it's an amazing ship. It's funny, whereas I tend to think of Star Wars ships as being a little bit, their fighters as being kind of like jet fighters, and the Millennium Falcon as being kind of compact, and you know, same for Star Destroyers. As you jump over to Star Trek, and you've got these kind of like long necks to things, you know, little connectors and stuff that to nacelles. They don't look like they should be powerful, but those Klingon ships look like you know, birds of prey to. To lean a little bit into another
you know, the Bird of Prey was designed to be a Romulan ship.
Right, yeah. No, I mean, Birds of Prey in the sense that it looks like a vulture. I mean,
yeah.
It just looks like a freaking vulture with wings outspread, with a long neck and a head and stuff like that. So it kind of has this primal animal-like threat to it.
Yeah,
it also looks like an insect. If I was picking it, I gotta go D7 too. My cheater pick, though, would be the Star Trek Next Generation era Romulan Warbird, I guess it would be. That weird sort of hollowed out thing mm-hmm. that they had. I just love the design on that. It was another one where I thought there's nothing else that really looks like this. And it felt as innovative as the classic Trek designs, but different. It looked like a bird, you know, but it was like a behemoth, too. I felt like I was kind of disappointed in how it was used at times early on there, but I still like the ship. So,
And there's a action figure of Morn, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember seeing that. He's a... I don't know if we'll have graphics up of this, but he's like a toady-looking dude with a throat sack.
Yeah.
But he's humanoid. Do you got another question?
Kirk or Picard? Who's the better captain?
You know what's different? Who's the better captain, or who do I prefer? If we're going with who's the better captain, I feel like I might have to go Picard. There's a time I would have kicked myself in the nuts for saying that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like he was kind of the frou-frou guy, and Kirk was the man of action, and the non-tea-drinking, non-negotiating guy who outwitted his opponents and outbluffed them. But that's young Dave talking. Older Dave is kind of likes a guy who's a little bit more of a statesman. And it's not like Picard didn't get his share of dust-ups and stuff, too, but... If I had to say better captain, I will say I think it's somewhat unfair to judge the classic show TOS based on somewhat modern standards, because I do think that it was a different time. They wanted to be a little more action adventure-y, and it was also that you weren't meant to watch every episode of it, maybe. So they needed to remind you he was kind of a badass in every episode. He was a ladies' man, but I'm going to, with difficulty, say Picard. How about you?
My answer is Ben Sisko.
What? That's not even in the equation. You can't do that.
I don't care.
You're cheating the way he cheated? You're sure. Kobayashi Maruing the question?
Yeah, Ben Sisko is hands down the... You can make the argument that Janeway might have been more tested than Sisko. Because, mm-hmm. Those were the two most unique shows.
Right.
The other three shows, they all were pretty much the same premise. Here is a ship called the Enterprise that is exploring space.
Right.
Whereas Deep Space Nine was set on a space station in the middle of a galacto-political conflict,
right,
that escalated into a full-scale war. And Voyager, you have a ship that's... They're lost.
Castaways,
they're stranded.
Yeah,
yeah, they're out on their own. So, like, both those shows, you have... a main character who's really more challenged than any of the other captains that are just exploring on
right.
their ship, and but the there's a lot that I like about Sisko. Like, he was they pretty clearly like wanted to make a guy who was different than Picard, and
right.
I think early on like they almost made him kind of, I don't want to say like the anti Picard, but he didn't like Picard. In the first episode, like, they meet each other, and, you know, Picard is the guy. Last time he saw this face, he was a Borg commanding a Borg cube.
Oh, that's right.
Sisko's wife died in that battle.
I forgot that was a thing.
And so you got to look at it, Sisko, like, the face of the man that, killed his wife, belongs to this guy who's, like, just hero-worshipped and considered, like, oh, this great captain. He commands
right.
the flagship of the Federation. And Picard just, like, goes around. Same thing that Kirk did. You know, he handles a situation on a planet, and then he leaves. And, like, Sisko is just stuck with this shit.
Right.
You know, he has the Cardassians to deal with. He's trying to help the Bajorans. They think he's God.
Right.
And his first officer thinks he's God, so he has to deal with that. And he ends up, leading the Federation in this war. That they do a pretty good job of like, really making it look like, pretty hopeless.
Right.
And there's consequences to it, because he doesn't go anywhere else. He's there, he's at the station. You know, if something happens, there's a consequence to it.
Right.
And
it is definitely the more real-world one. I don't know if you
yeah.
can say objectively that that's a better captain, because these other guys, by having sort of more mission-of-the-week stories, you could say, look, Picard, like, solved, like, 300 space dilemmas, all of which could have led to wars, and Sisko's just messing with the same one over
you
and
know,
over.
You would think that, but then, like, you see something like... They explore the mirror universe again in
right.
Deep Space Nine, where, okay, the first time we see that in the original series, Kirk goes over to the mirror universe, he talks to evil Spock,
right.
you know, convinces him to, like, you need to, like, change the society here, and become, like, this utopia world where I come
right.
from. Then, so, you know, Kirk goes back to his universe. You think everything's fine and dandy. In Deep Space Nine, we find out, well, yeah, Spock tried that and it didn't work. And it was just a big clusterfuck. And
see, I just assumed that it worked until DS9 came along and ruined that.
No. They're showing you that, like, you can't just, like, solve a problem and leave. Like,
actually, I forgot that that was the deal, and I very much want to see that. Well, like I say, like, I feel like it's a little unfair because original Trek was not meant to be that kind of show. It was meant to present kind of smaller bites of problems and solutions, you know, dealt with, yeah, you know, with JFK-ish kind of bravado and know-how. Sure. And, but I do love the idea of how the shows kind of continue to mature the ideas for their era, deal with deeper problems, deal with the fallout of, you know, what might have been a very well-intentioned thing.
Yeah.
I'm super looking forward to watching some of that stuff and doing more DS9
things. The TOS TNG model is more episodic. The DS9 approach is more serialized. You know, it's good to have both.
Yep.
And Star Trek has the flexibility where it could be both.
I have a ridiculous question for you.
Okay.
Who do you think the Jar Jar of Star Trek is?
Oh.
I have a couple possibilities in my mind.
Jar Jar is pretty bad. I don't know. It's kind of mean because, like, whoever I say it is.
I'm gonna give you some choices. You may know some other ones to throw in there from stuff I haven't seen. Neelix.
I knew Neelix is gonna be on there.
Wesley Crusher. Troy's mom, Laxana.
Yeah.
Troy. Maybe Barkley. Some people love him, but the dude's annoying too. And that's all I've got. I don't know who. I don't know if there's anybody else.
I'm actually going to go with. I think the character is called Keenzer, but he's the short. He's the short little alien in the Kelvin timeline movies that I've got with Scotty.
Scotty's little buddy.
Yeah.
Now you have to pick somebody from the show.
There was actually this one episode of the Next Generation that where they were going to add, like, I guess, like, this screwball comedic character that mm-hmm. worked in engineering, and I think we only see her in two different episodes. She spills coffee on Picard when he's, like, down there talking to Geordi, and then, like, we see her one other episode other than that, but they got rid of the character pretty quickly.
That seems like probably a good idea. If I had to pick, I feel like it's Troy's mom. I don't know if I ever liked her in any episode I saw her in.
You know, I like the character, but whenever I'm rewatching Star Trek, I do like sometimes I'm like, oh, we got to deal with her again in this episode. I might skip it.
I feel like a better case might be able to be made for Neelix because he's so prominent in Voyager. But every once in a while, I kind of liked him. But yeah, you know, I remember Peter David did some okay stuff with her in the books. So, I will allow that the character has possibilities. But yeah, those shows are a little bit rough for me. I don't know if we want to kind of wrap this up. If you've got any other questions you want to bounce my way. If you want a lightning round.
What about favorite Star Trek aliens?
Favorite Star Trek aliens. You know, this feels like a good time because it's the anniversary of the Man Trap, right?
Yeah.
That the salt vampire left a huge impression on me as a kid, just as it left an impression on the faces of the people it sucked the salt from. Always in the closing credits of every episode, so you get to see that creepy design. But, yeah, it was like this creepy space sea hag looking thing. It was an early awesomely creepy alien. I'm gonna say also I love the Horda, little blob scabs from the original series, and I mean, you know, like Vulcans of course are amazing. But yeah, it's just favorite alien. Do I have to pick one?
Sure, pick one.
The Mugato. A lot of my stuff kind of defaults classic Trek. And if I have to pick one, it's got to be Vulcans. It's like the best concept ever. If I'm picking a monster alien, I'm going to say the Horda. Because they introduced a Horda character in like the novels in like the 80s. And I always thought that'd be cool and wish they had done that in the movies. Something a little less human. I'm hoping maybe the Discovery might do something like that.
Well, Discovery... Oh, yeah, they could do it with a different alien, but they can't do it with the Horda. Because Discovery is before they
Oh, right, right, right. It'd have to be something kind of different. What's favorite alien?
Well, the Vulcans and the Klingons were probably touched on and explored the most. You know, three of the five shows had a Vulcan character. But since you touched on Vulcans, I would I hate to go Klingon because that seems like such a like generic common answer to that question.
Yeah.
And there's probably
To some degree, that's only because they've become so iconic.
Right.
Because they were so successful.
I mean, they were the only aliens on the original series that really recurred, you know, were Klingons and Romulans. Like, yeah, like, they'd have, like, Andorians, no Ryan Slade girls. And stuff.
Yeah, they just background, mostly.
Yeah, but, I mean, there were, you know, there were six pretty, Klingon-focused episodes, and then they were often, like, referenced to, or, you know, they would always mention the Klingons. Romulans also to a lesser degree, but, you know, they, pretty much every movie has Klingons in it. The character Worf was on The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm.
So they definitely used Worf a lot in how the original series would use Spock as a vehicle to explore like Vulcan society and you know, stuff like I hear it pronounced different ways, but Amok time or Amok time or
Amok time is.
What does that even mean? Does that mean like running amok or?
Yeah, but I think it's. I used to think it was. It's the. It's the time in which people run amok. That is exactly right.
It always confused me as a kid, but yeah, like they would. They
that's,
would
ex- that's the one where Spock's like, "I gotta get laid."
Yeah,
yeah.
they would explore, you know, Vulcans through Spock. The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, would do a bunch of Klingon stuff with Worf.
And the interesting thing was, I felt like early on they were kind of embarrassed of him. He was the one warlike character in a group of negotiators and peacemakers. And, like, so every idea he threw out kind of got pooped on, and he was always wrong. He was always like, open fire, we should attack immediately.
Yeah, he was the more conservative guy.
Yeah. But then later they got interested, and they're like, oh, you know, he probably has this, a really interesting culture, and... They gave him a really interesting culture.
Yeah, that really came in season three when Ron Moore, most famously known for Battlestar Galactica, the reimagined Battlestar Galactica. But when he came in season three, and he wrote a lot of the Klingon episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then he later went on to write on DS9. And if you look at both shows, you can like follow this whole story with Worf where... He basically put Gowron on the throne to be the Chancellor of the Klingon Empire, and then in Deep Space Nine he ends up taking him off of the throne. And
oh, interesting!
So you have this whole Klingon.
You get to view their whole civil war and the line of succession, their Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
yeah,
and this whole story with like the Klingon government and. And sometimes, Worf is this fish out of water because he doesn't belong in Klingon society because he is raised on Earth. He's a member of Starfleet. Mm-hmm. And, but when it comes to, like, living in the Federation, he wants to be a Klingon with Klingon values, and he doesn't fit in there either, so...
Yeah, I hadn't... You know, because I think of Data as the Spock character since he's, you know, the... fulfill so many of the same sort of roles in the show.
Sure.
But, yeah, as far as, like, that sort of torn between cultures thing, yeah, that's... Worf is actually really the successor.
Yeah, and it's so... It's such a different character than Spock that it doesn't feel like a rehash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's reasonable.
Okay, well, we hope that y'all enjoyed those questions. Again, we want to not only hear your answers to the questions... But we also want you to be the ones asking the questions next time.
I think, like, a few weird questions would be kind of cool. Like,
The weirder the better.
Yes.
Again, you can ask whatever you want. No promise that we'll answer it, but ask away.
All right. Shall we call it?
I think that's going to be it. Live long and prosper, y'all.
Thank all of you so much for checking out this installment of Text Trek. I hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to like our YouTube videos and subscribe to our channel. Audio-only version of episodes are available at our website, www.text-trek.com. Please check out our site, especially if you just want an audio-only podcast. We have that available for you. Y'all can also keep up with us online. You can follow us on Twitter, at TXTrek, or you can check us out on Facebook at www.facebook.com/text-trek. Please, by all means, let us know what you think by dropping a comment anywhere you see fit. We definitely want to hear your feedback. Let us know what you liked and what you would like to see more of, what you would like to see differently going forward. If you want to email me directly, go ahead. I can be reached at fatheryactual@text-trek.com. Thank all y'all again. Take care.